Former University of Florida tennis player and current pro tennis coach Jordan Belga joins us today to talk about what he has learned with blending together his love for Jesus and his passion for sport. As someone that has had such a fascinating journey to get to where he is today, Jordan opens up about some very important topics that he's gone through, like having his identity in tennis rather than Jesus, what he went through as a youth and high school athlete, and so much more. You're going to love this conversation today. But one thing that Jordan and I spent some time on today is this platform that he made called Rooted Competitor. This Instagram page gives athletes and people that love sports an opportunity to open up about some really sensitive topics and just share what they've gone through and how they've seen Christ move in their lives. I know I have been so impacted personally by some of these stories on there, so I promise you, you really need to go check that out. Such a great resource for every athlete out there. I'll definitely make sure to put the link in the description. But for now, let's hear from Jordan Belga. Welcome back to the Competing for Christ podcast. I'm Ken Burke, and today we are talking to Jordan Belga. Jordan, I appreciate you coming on today, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a fun conversation today. And, you know, we've chatted a little bit previously, and I've been on Rooted Competitor, which is something that we're going to talk about for sure. But I first off want to talk with you about your fascinating journey through tennis and as a Christian in sports. So what has that process been like for you in blending together your love for Jesus with your love for sports?
Yeah, so I mean, I think for me, so I've lived in Florida, for those of you listening, since 2010, but before that was a Midwest kid, so born and raised up in the suburbs of Chicago. Was fortunate to have been born into family of believers since the beginning, so I was a typical Sunday school kid with my faith upbringing, went to church every Sunday, got to pretty much get involved with, I think my parents put me into Baptist private Christian elementary school from preschool to fourth grade. So was decently involved with faith pretty much being a daily part of my life. But it was one of those things where I grew up in the environment. I accepted Christ into my life in first grade. So I knew scripture, I knew the gospel, I knew the Ten Commandments, but I'd say it was kind of just a general religion to me with my understanding. You know, I knew how to, you know, be portrayed as a quote unquote good Christian, or even, you know, come off of it from the external side of it. But I didn't necessarily know why I was believing. So it was pretty general and shallow, honestly, growing up. I didn't know the whys of why I was believing. And I probably honestly came off maybe a bit stereotypically legalistic, I'd say, with kind of how I viewed the world and faith from early grade school years to middle school and high school. And then with sports, I'd say that got introduced into my life around 5-6 years old. Kind of dabbled a little bit of everything, was just trying to be active, and my parents put me into everything. And then I guess at 7-8 years old, hitting a yellow fuzzy ball in a big rectangular court with two pieces of graphite sticks resonated with me a little bit more than the other sports. And that's where I'd say the tennis dream and career started. It pretty much just started early years, was just a 2 to 3 times casual fun thing per week. And then once I made the commitment to actually want to do this thing, a lot of sacrificial decisions and hard work that followed in. We started homeschooling me after fourth grade, started practicing 5 to 6 times per week now for 3 to 4 hours a day. So definitely became pretty rigorous, or no, not rigorous, pretty active. And yeah, and then I started to compete more probably nationally around 9-10 years old, traveling a bit more. So yeah, that was kind of my upbringing with sports and faith from the beginning.
Yeah, and you know, as someone that has been in tennis for so long now, I mean, you just said, you know, you were playing national tournaments when you were 9 years old. How did that affect, you know, your day-to-day life and just how you viewed life as an athlete?
Yeah, it was essentially almost pretty much an obsession,
yeah.
I'd say. It was everything I could only dream or want at the time, because that's how badly I wanted to be a professional, you know? And so, I mean, it was definitely an ongoing thing, you know, from my parents, who always kept me grounded and told me, you know, we're willing to commit and do this thing as long as you put faith first, put school first and the family, and then tennis comes after with those priorities, you know, we're willing to support you and help you out the best we can. So, you know, I think it started with that, with how my family kept me grounded and always pushed me to be the best I could be, to work hard, to have a good attitude, and to try and do things the right way with how I went about everything. So I think it started with that, but it definitely, I mean, I didn't really have a social life for a long time. I mean, one with being homeschooled and almost spending most of my days on the tennis court, it was pretty much living and breathing tennis.
Yeah, and I'm sure that was so difficult for you as someone, you know, going into high school, you were just obsessed with it. And then, you know, you go to play in college. What was your college experience like? Did you really like going to Florida? How was that experience for you?
It was interesting because I think kind of transitioning from when I first started into probably maybe just sharing kind of the high school phase first, kind of before elaborating to the college experience.
Yeah.
I mean, once I kind of got to, I'd say 11 and 12 years old, that's when it really started to probably take another notch with my career. Got a lot of opportunities to compete more now on a consistent monthly basis. Also started getting invited to training camps with the USA Tennis Federation as well, monthly. So that was pretty cool to be a part of my development process as well. And then from 12 to 14, I started experiencing mountain peaks of success throughout my career, with just to kind of name a few. I got to be number one in the country for the 12 and under, 14 under age division in the US, got to represent the US in international world junior team tennis events, Junior Davis Cup. So also got to go a bit international as well in that time period. And yeah, I mean, it was funny because at 12 to 14, I'd say I probably didn't really have any ambitions of going to college, if I'm being honest. I was thinking to go pro straight out of high school, because that's where the dream and desire was. And that was kind of the incline I was taking. And then at 14, I was definitely at a very high up-to-date peak with my career. And then the Federation, they had just started launching their full-time development program. So essentially a deal where they would pretty much invite select kids to pretty much move to South Florida. So they were based in South Florida at the time, to move down, be dorm there, and pretty much train there full-time, get all schooling expenses covered, get all competing traveling expenses covered, and get set up with a Federation coach to pretty much essentially train like a pro, essentially. And so I was offered that at 13, 14 years old, and definitely a big conversation I had to have with the family with, okay, are we gonna, you know, what's, you know, where are we looking long term with this? What is my current situation in Chicago looking like tennis wise? Is this, you know, right for the family? And so kind of after going back and forth, you know, the family, we decided to sell the house up in Chicago and make the move down to South Florida, you know, with supporting me and hoping that this would be the next progression and chasing after that pro dream, essentially. And so with that, kind of shifting into now my time with the Federation as a player, unfortunately, it probably didn't happen. It wasn't really a poppy happy experience, my time with the Federation. You know, just a lot of factors that came into play with, I think, just the environment training wise was just a different shift of culture than what I was used to at the time. I think also the social environment was a bit of a culture shock to me as well, which at that point in time with my faith, I honestly was probably very stagnant with it for a couple of years just because of how crazy obsessed I was with my tennis. And I mean, again, I was still going to church. I was still reading my Bible, probably at my own convenience, but I wasn't necessarily pursuing a relationship with Christ, you know? So it was very stagnant for a good couple of years to that point. And then also being in that dorm situation now, probably getting my first exposure to secular society. So first time, you know, being a church kid who was homeschooled, first time hearing curse words in daily conversation, first time hearing, you know, secular music like Eminem, Drake, Jay-Z, like songs I typically wouldn't listen to. It was like all new to me. First time hearing about, you know, premarital kind of sexual things that were happening at a high school age. And so it was all like, wow, this is completely different to me. So that was a big adjustment too. Coach wise, I'd say I got paired up with a coach that probably didn't maybe click well with my personality at the time. So I think that was also another big adjustment as well. And then I'd say probably to cap off the experience, I had a back injury from my time there. I had two stress fractures, on one on each side of my lower back, that put me out of my career for a little over a year, close to a year and a half. And yeah, it definitely wasn't really a happy experience with the Federation. And that probably played a big part in, honestly, me going the college pathway, you know, kind of to answer your question. But it was hard to accept that as a 14-year-old at the time, because that wasn't really my ambition. And, you know, during that time period, I was in a very bitter, dark place with everything. You know, first time having really a major injury and first time not really stepping on a court for a long period of time. And I didn't really know who I was. You know, I was very questioning with who I was, with my tennis, who was God to me. So that was probably the first time I got tested and trialed with everything, with me, with my faith. And in a weird way, you know, it was kind of an experience that I needed to go through to start my journey from, you know, being a kid who religiously grew up in the church and legalistically seeing the world, to now being my eyes open to the brokenness for my situation, to the brokenness of who I am as a sinner who needs a savior. And that started pretty much a journey of me pursuing a relationship with Christ that flourished into the rest of my high school years and college years. So I guess now transitioning and shifting into going into college now, X amount of years later, you know, which I already accepted that was going to be my pathway. You know, if I wanted to still give professional tennis a shot, it would be through the college pathway. Now, going into college, I was kind of hyper-focused on, again, trying to redeem my career through college tennis and pretty much do the best I can with my academics as well. I didn't really have any expectation on what it would be like being on a team, just because one, tennis is an individual sport. So it's kind of counterintuitive with, okay, you're on a team now, which I still didn't necessarily know what that meant exactly. Yeah. So I honestly didn't really know. I was just, you know, thinking, okay, I'm going to do my best with trying to work my way into the lineup to be, you know, a starter, to be a guy who wanted to carry the team and just do the best I can academically. So that was kind of my expectation with going into college.
Yeah. And, you know, through your entire journey, it seems like there was so much, there was constant pressure on you. You know, your family moved from the Midwest to Florida. You wanted to be professional. You want to play in college. How did that pressure weigh on you throughout your career?
I was the type of athlete and player that in the funny way, I probably was probably my worst enemy with pressure. Yeah. I was always putting the weight of the world with myself. I was always, if I lost, you know, in competition or in tennis matches, I was always probably shooting myself first in the leg with that. And so I think it was important for me to kind of find that balance where over time I probably had to learn how to be my own biggest encourager as well. And I also definitely credit the coaches around me throughout the later years of my high school years that really were always reminding me of, you know, the improvement I was making and just being very encouraging to me as well. I mean, they were definitely still tough on me without a doubt, but in a way it was always encouraging and going to uplift me. But it was always, you know, a process with trying to understand, you know, what's at stake, but also not trying to let that be your main focus, because when it comes to the process of improving and developing, again, obviously results are important, you know. I mean, to anyone who says that they aren't important, it's, you know, it's, I mean, for this industry and sports, it's everything to a degree, you know. But to be able to focus on being a better competitor and getting better, it starts with being locked into the process of, you know, just wanting to get better, wanting to improve week in and week out. So I think that's probably the best way I'd say I tried to manage it. Definitely wasn't pretty all the time, depending on how results went, depending on how training went week to week. But I'd say that was probably one of the biggest emphasis I tried to focus on, and also enjoying it too as well. I think I was probably also another kid who was maybe a bit too serious, if that's a thing in a way. You know, I never really naturally joked around in practice. I was pretty much almost too businesslike with how I went about things. And so I probably needed to remind myself to enjoy it maybe a little bit more at times.
Yeah, I relate to that so much. I feel like when I was in high school, I wanted to be so serious and be the best athlete I could be so I can get a scholarship to go to college. But then, you know, that just took away so much of what my experience was. You know what I mean? Like, cause I was around my friends and I was around my teammates and I loved those guys, but I wasn't allowing myself to enjoy the moment. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't allowing myself to be a high school kid, you know?
Oh yeah. No, it's tough because, you know, I almost wanted it too badly that, and this is probably where the perfectionistic side came in me a little bit too much, where, okay, if I don't have it today, or if I don't have things a certain way, the way I'm really kind of visualizing it, then it's like, okay, what was the whole point of it? What was the whole point of it? So it was always an internal battle with that all the time for me.
Yeah. When did that shift start to happen? Like, was there a specific moment where you started to say like, oh, I've been straying away from Jesus's calling this amount of years or whatever? When was that shift? Was it like in college or a specific year, a specific day? How did that go?
I can't say there was like this aha moment. I think it was probably more of an accumulation journey per se of me going through, let's say, a couple of years or series of events and then looking back. But I'd say the spiritual maturity definitely probably took another level throughout college, I'd say. So I guess kind of diving deeper into that. So my first 2 years in college were probably the tougher years for me compared to the latter two. I mean, again, like I shared earlier, coming into college with expectations of pretty much just my own selfish tennis ambitions with doing what I can to get my way into the lineup and contribute by playing in the lineup and winning and just pretty much sustaining academic eligibility. I mean, my first week in college was probably the biggest eye-opener that, okay, it's a lot more than just it's a lot more than just tennis and academics. Like, you're hanging out with 10, 11 other guys every single day. And so, you know, I think the challenges of that definitely took a weight on me my first 2 years per se. And then tennis wise, I ended up being more of a bottom lineup guy. So I guess you could say that, six man equivalent to basketball, that one guy who was not necessarily competing every single game, but you literally had to be ready for when your name was called for whatever situation, which I wasn't happy with that. I wasn't like, okay, this, how am I going to get anywhere with playing pro tennis if I'm not competing or if I'm not starting? And so that process in of itself kind of was, that was definitely the weight of the trial. With my time in college, I was battling from the tennis piece, athlete piece of not really wanting to accept my role, but I'd still have to come to practice. I still have to show up and again practice and work hard, even though I wasn't getting what I wanted. But it was always that inner conflicting battle. And then spiritually, I was definitely very different from the typical student athlete, collegiate culture. I wasn't really a partier or a drinker, and almost all my teammates were, definitely some more than others to a degree with, how deep they went into it, but that's kind of how they bonded as a team. And I was definitely a very extreme outlier with, I do not drink. I do not, that's not my thing. And spiritually, it was a battle of, again, because I was also battling my legalism with trying, with every ounce I could spiritually to not point a finger or to not cast a stone, because that was my internal battle with what I was dealing with. But I was also probably getting misunderstood of when I wasn't hanging with the team on the weekends or in, certain social environments. I was probably being misunderstood as not wanting to be a part of the team. And personality wise for me too, I was a very strong natural introvert. I know I don't sound like it right now talking to you, but I was a very strong natural introvert. So talking wasn't really my thing. I had a lot of internalized thoughts. I was very good at observing, listening, and watching things, but I wasn't very good at communicating what I was processing or thinking. So that was also another thing that I was battling, probably especially when it came to locker room conversations in particular. But yeah, I'd say those two things were the weight of my battles throughout college. And I think it was kind of going through that growth journey with, I think from the sports side. But it's, I think it probably all came together more acceptingly after my sophomore year. But yeah, towards the mid end of my sophomore year, that's where I was able to get to a place where I could have peace and acceptance with my role on the team. I came to a reminder of my identity not being in my line of position or what my teammates or my coach was, putting me in. But it became just a reminder of, again, my identity was in Christ. That's what defines me at the end of the day, with and also being able to shift into that team culture guy, again, like even though I'm not playing, just focusing on what I can control to show up, work hard, still practice and train, just as if I was competing, and do my best from the sideline to support the guys however I can. And then from the faith side, spiritually, I'd say the legalistic side of me really was, it was really taking the change and the shift with, again, like my eyes got open to see the brokenness of my teammates. They were just as equally broken as I was internally. And just because they sin differently than you doesn't make me any more self-righteous or any more different of a sinner than they are. So I started pushing myself to be around them bit by bit, you know, which again, that was still a battle of, you know, being in the world, but not of the world. But I was kind of telling myself, if I could hold my own spiritually in their environment, you know, I think that would do a multitude of, again, I'm still going to choose to be myself no matter what, but I also want to start to be more relational towards my teammates in the best way I could. And that was the example I always reference back in the New Testament when, especially in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, just a handful of examples when Jesus would hang out with sinners. You know, he hung out and had dinner with tax collectors, people who were pretty much considered the bottom of the totem pole in terms of morals and ethics. Now, he probably didn't condone the things that they were doing, but he still loved them as sinners. And that was the example I really leaned into to see that, you know, we all need grace and mercy. No one is perfect, and Christ is a standard that we should live by. Like, I don't necessarily have to, again, condone my teammates' actions or decisions or even agree with how we see the world, but I can still have a choice to choose to listen, understand, and respect and love them because we were all created in the image of God. And that's, I'd say, where the growth of mid end of sophomore year, and that's where I think the change started to happen for me, with a lot of lies being torn down. I was gaining more spiritual maturity, and yeah, that really flourished into the latter of my 2 years in college. But yeah, I mean, I definitely ranted on with that, but to answer your question, it was definitely a process of kind of struggling and healing, I'd say, with that.
No, I think that so many people that are listening to this can relate to that too, because Jesus, you know, like you just said, Jesus calls us to be in the world but not of the world, and it should, like, being around your teammates and not conforming to them, but showing them how you live because of Jesus speaks way more, or it shows them Jesus way more than you going to them and saying, like, you're living in sin. You know what I mean? Like, showing them where they're wrong, because, like, we are, you know, we're, like you said, we're broken, sinful people, just like everybody else in the world. So I think that really, tennis was an avenue for you to do that, I think, for sure, and still is, you know, as you're a coach now. How have, switching to Rooted Competitor, something that is very exciting, something that is a great platform for every athlete out there, I encourage everybody to go check that out on Instagram. Why did you start Rooted Competitor, and what was the origin story behind that?
I'd say the seed got planted in 2020, so just to kind of also give context prior to 2020, so I mean, once I graduated college in 2018 and I was going through probably my senior year at Florida, I came to peace with not pursuing professional tennis due to, I mean, a handful of factors. One, I'd say I was a bit burnt out with probably going through the straining process of what I just shared with you. Yep. With yeah, the struggle spiritually and as an athlete. And my junior year was probably actually the best year I had individually, again, to compete the most I ever did throughout the spring, but I was also competing with what ended up being a fractured wrist at the end of that season. And so that was kind of a bittersweet a bittersweet year, you know, trying to push through that as much as I could. And then that's kind of what pushed me into this phase of going to senior year. Okay, I have to figure out what I'm going to do with my life after college, which I had absolutely no clue, as I'm sure most college kids don't, with what they want to do afterwards. And which that was another process too, with that summer before my senior year, I was really going back and forth on, do I really want to continue playing after? Do I really want to? And it's tough because I was also still kind of perceiving it as quitting, which to a degree it was, but I think after having a lot of spiritual counsel with my psychologist, but also with some coaches around me as well, and also probably look at myself in the mirror of how much I really want to invest into that pursuit and lifestyle, it ended up being, I don't think, not that I didn't believe in my own abilities, but I just think realistically and kind of where I was spiritually in my career at the time, I just think it'd be better for me to move on with something else. So, kind of accepting that first going into my senior year, which I probably, was the most relaxed and enjoyed the most my senior year for sure, without a doubt, just being on a team, playing when I got the chance to, make the most of it. If I didn't get to play, I'll still support my team the same. So that was never going to change. But yeah, going into figuring out what I wanted to do after college was definitely, a journey in itself of, okay, God, I was a sport management major with a minor in business. So probably initially had thoughts with going down that avenue, but I had absolutely no clue what I was going to be doing. I mean, I had done coaching jobs in between summers in college at a country club and academy down in South Florida, which I had enjoyed coaching, because it was a passion of mine of seeing it as a platform of wanting to help others in the sport. But I can't say it was my initial instinctive decision at the top of my head. So I went on the, constant prayer journey my senior year of, God, I don't know what I'm going to do after college, but, I want to trust in you and lean into you with whichever platform you want me to be in to the best glorify you and to serve you. And so just after applying for a bunch of things throughout my senior year and definitely going through a lot of open and closed doors, I landed a coaching fellowship with the USA Tennis Federation, which again, the irony of that, given my previous experience with them as a player.
Yeah.
So, which again, I came to peace and acceptance from that situation years ago. So it was definitely an intriguing one and definitely did take some convincing from mutual friends who had done the coaching fellowship program the year before me. And yeah, I went in full throttle with that, got accepted into that. And that was a program which was pretty unique. They started the program to help build and send a new wave of younger generational coaches that wanted to take an interest in tennis coaching and kind of make them go through a soul search of what pathway of coaching they like to pursue. And so for me, I definitely had a strong interest of wanting to be in the pro space in terms of coaching. And so they put me up with the Team USA pro division, being around the top 100, 200 ranked pros of Americans on both the male and the female side for 3.5 months of the summer. And so that was a bit of that was a great whirlwind of an experience, getting to be at the typical bigger events you get to see on TV, getting to be around a lot of the pros I've watched on television for years, kind of now a behind the scenes lens with being in the locker room, being in the training facilities, being in the practice courts with them. So that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. And so it concluded at the US Open and the Federation had asked me if I'd like to stay onboarded with them to, working hand in hand with the woman's side. And that's kind of how it got all started. So I started on the women's side of the pro space division with Team USA for tennis. And yeah, that kind of was the kickoff to my coaching career from 2018. But yeah, now going back to, I guess, with Ruta competitors. So in 2020, obviously that's when COVID became a reality into the world. And so the Federation was put into lockdown. And for a good couple months, we were just doing a bunch of Zoom call meetings, as I'm sure the rest of the world was at that point. And so we were having, all staff and coaches present and share on different topics and experiences, because one, that's all we could do. And two, that's kind of what we were doing as action items, just to go through each week and each month. So my boss, she called me up and one day and asked me if I'd be interested in getting on a call to share my experience with the Federation, but she wanted me to share the experience I had with them as a player. Now, like I mentioned earlier, I came to acceptance and peace with kind of all the bitterness and brokenness I had dealt with years to follow after my experience with them. And definitely grew a ton, you know, personally and spiritually from that, and got to the point where I was sharing my story to friends and family around me for, you know, a good couple of years. But now, you know, I never really got to talk to anyone at all from the staff or the Federation about that experience to me. And so of course I had to say, you know, of course I said yes, because she's my boss and I wanted to keep my job still at the time. But, you know, Ken, it was one of those things where I was really wrestling with preparing for sharing that experience, because, you know, and this is definitely an exaggerated sense, it was like a borderline PTSD preparation phase with what am I going to share that's, you know, because it wasn't really an encouraging experience. It was a very hurting experience that, you know, caused a lot of brokenness and a lot of bitterness. You know, I definitely had a lot of, you know, kind of demons from that experience that really layered for a couple of years after that, you know, with the Federation. So it was really tough to, you know, my first instinct was probably to cast a stone or to point the finger with kind of what went wrong with my whole experience and all that. But, you know, it probably wasn't going to be the best productive way to do it either. And so after kind of wrestling with it for a couple of days, and literally the day before going into it, I, you know, ended up getting on my knees, surrendering and praying over to God, you know, just praying, Lord, first off, just thank you for the opportunity to get to share my story, share this experience with the Federation. But Lord, if I'm being honest, this was a very difficult story. This was, you know, a lot of bitterness, a lot of hatred, a lot of brokenness that, you know, it set my career back for a long time. And I wasn't the same player as I was before that time period. And Lord, I just don't know how I'm gonna, you know, share this without letting any of that come out from the brokenness I was experiencing. But Lord, I just please ask in conviction that you let the truth be shared in the most graceful way as possible, that your truth becomes my truth, that your words become my words, to let your light shine and let you be glorified through what you also did in my experience. Not only did I experience the brokenness, but I was also able to experience the weight of your grace for the first time in my life from that experience. So that's kind of the posture and prayer I went into the meeting the day before, and yeah, shared the story for a little over an hour, and definitely had a lot of emotions on edge, but was definitely keeping it pretty calm and collective for the most part. And afterwards, and I'd say this is probably where the seed got planted, you know, I had an overwhelming number of the staff reach out to me individually, just one, commending me on sharing, you know, that experience with them, but also two, kind of in a shock and awe moment, a lot of them were just really in awe of, like, even after that experience, you're working with us, working with the Federation this many years later, like, how and why? And to me, I can only just reflect, you know, and just say it was all God. It was all God, of the way he was able to really change my life through that experience for years to come, that forced into my high school years and college years. But also too, with the grace I was able to receive, and after many years of healing with reflection and acceptance and moving on and seeing how God worked in and through not only the good I've had in my career, but also the bad and the valleys and the downtimes I've had. Like it says in Romans 8:28, he makes all things work together for our own good according to his purpose and his will for our lives. And yeah, and that's kind of where the birth of Rooted Competitor came into play, from me getting the opportunity to share my story with the people around me, both personally and professionally, and just see God glorified through the impact that he has made in my life, of wanting to give others that same opportunity to do so with their social media platforms. But yeah, that's kind of where the birth of it got started.
Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy story. You know, you went from someone that hated playing tennis because of one coach, and you're right back in it now, being one of those coaches, which is crazy. But I think it just speaks on how God can use, you know, your past to really excel or push you forward. Because I know that's what he did for me, and I relate to that so much with like bad experience with a coach growing up, and it just like it's one thing to forgive the coach, it's another thing to try to forgive yourself for thinking that, you know, you are a worse player after being with them. You know what I mean? Because you feel like it's your fault that you aren't the better player anymore. And you weren't really thinking in a Christian way that when that was happening. But I think it's so amazing that you are starting this platform for athletes, or you started this platform for athletes and people that want to bring their sport or the Jesus into their sport. How have you gotten athletes to really open up? Because a lot of these athletes have gone through some really serious, hard things. How have you been able to just share that in a respectful way?
It's funny because, you know, I think, one, just reflecting on, you know, my experience, you know, personally, like I just shared a bunch, you know, it's definitely my journey has definitely come from a lot of brokenness, mm-hmm. and a lot of, you know, trial, struggle, and healing that needed to take place for years, which I do think that's, in a cool and weird way, just the common parallel of the sports journey and the faith journey in a lot of ways, which I really try to highlight with the essence of my page. And a lot of people from the outside externally don't really know the reality of the grind that it takes a toll on. Just the grind of the sports and the faith journey. I mean, there's such a common parallel with both of those realms that have a lot of ups and downs. You know, with the sports journey, there's a lot of, you know, from people from the outside, they don't really know the grind of the journey until you're actually in it and doing it for years on end with a constant cycle of, again, putting in hours to hopefully get a certain result. And if you don't, you have to do it all over again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's just a constant cycle of that for years. And then the tangible challenges or the intangible challenges with maybe dealing with coaches that you don't click with from a style or personality standpoint, or maybe dealing with teammates that have given you a hard time, or maybe just clashed with the team culture, or even dealing with injuries on and off that can be annoying to go through. And a lot of people don't really know the details and reality of that journey until you're actually in it and doing it. And from the spiritual journey, I think there's a lot of people, again, this is just not in sports, just with the faith world in general, but a lot of people's perception of, again, people in faith, again, whether you are actually a genuine follower of Christ or maybe surfacely viewed as a religious person or a church person, you kind of have this stereotypical perception of either being very judgmental or living in this picture perfect reality, having it all together. But, you know, unfortunately, I think the judgmental piece can be true, which admittedly, I was probably one of those growing up. So, you know, that's where I definitely have to apologize from my behalf. But I do think, again, the closer I've gotten in my relationship with Christ over the years, it's come from a lot of trials and circumstances of me not getting what I want and God allowing that to kind of fruition into changing my heart, whether it was lies that I was believing in at the time or maybe truth that I was probably misaligned with and only seeing it selfishly for myself instead of seeing it how God was trying to, you know, communicate that to me or show it to me in a very real life scenario way, or also a lot of times of doubting and questioning and even being angry at God for why things are happening. But through all of that and always going through, when I was always in the darker times of choosing to, you know, ask for repentance and forgiveness and surrender everything to God, to lay my brokenness down before Him, to lay it all down to Him, to deny myself, to carry the cross, and to, you know, chase after Him. And I think I always like to say grace is, it's very beautiful when you get to experience it, but it's also very, very messy at the same time, you know. And that's the hard-hitting truth and promises of, you know, following Christ. It's not always about getting what we want, but it's all about getting what Christ wants for us. And easier said than done all the time. But again, like Christ, you know, in the Word, we weren't prompt, you know, like it says in John 16:33, coming from that verse, you know, we aren't promised that we aren't going to experience loss. We aren't going to experience trial and struggle, but, you know, Christ, we can take heart because Christ has overcome the world and He will never leave us nor forsake us. But that's what I really try to bring the essence with the page. And so when I really try to connect and reach out to, you know, these athletes and other believers in the sports world, it starts with me just kind of being as transparent and open and vulnerable for myself. I think it starts with that first, of giving them the space, even though I am running this platform, you know, I don't want it to also be like, hey, you know, I'm just kind of exposing your, your weakness or your vulnerability. You know, because I also went through that too myself as well. And just kind of always sharing that story of my brokenness, my mistakes, and what I've gone through to, you know, I'm still, you know, again, Christ is definitely still working in and through my life now as we speak. But I think it starts with sharing that transparency and vulnerability first from my end to give them the comfort, to give them the choice of how much they want to share with their story. And I always leave it kind of letting them have be the lead and guide of how open and transparent you want to be. Because I do think there has to be a rational balance of, obviously, with a social media platform, which I always share this with people, with sharing their stories, you know, I definitely encourage the more raw, real, and transparent you can be. I think that's what creates the weight of giving the reader that vibe of what it's like to walk a mile in your shoes and just to share how powerful our God is through our brokenness. But at the same time, I also try to be very self-aware that social media can be and still is a very open and judgmental place at the same time. And everyone's social situation when it comes to sharing their faith could be compromising, or it could be different in a lot of different ways, whether it's with family, teammates, coaches, or anyone external in their lives. So I always give them the lead on how open and transparent they want to be. My role, I'd say, when it comes to this process of the content story for the page, I'm kind of more the cautionary tape role per se. So when they send me their draft and we're going back and forth, you know, I just kind of look through the details of what they shared and just make sure to double check, you know, are you sure this is okay to put out? Just want to make sure you're not compromising. Because like I said, I'm all for a powerful open story, but I also want them to feel comfortable with how transparent and open they choose to be with it as well.
Yeah, that's so true. And I, from following the page, I can just tell how having those real raw stories of people that have gone through really hard things, I mean, it brings people from all over that really want to know more about Jesus, because, you know, people on social media, especially nowadays, people just want to see people that are real. Like, they don't want this fake cookie cutter thing anymore. They want people to just be real and show them that this is what I've gone through and this is what Christ has brought me through. So I think it's such a cool platform, such a unique idea, and I really respect you for starting it. But Jordan, I really do appreciate your time today, and I thank you so much for how you're serving Christ through tennis and Rooted Competitor. But thank you so much for joining me today.
No, thank you, Ken. I appreciate talking, and thank you for having me.
For all you listening out there, please make sure to subscribe to the show and share this episode with an athlete that you know. It always means so much to me every time anybody does that. But if you do not get anything else from this, just remember this: Jesus loves you, and he's going to fight for you no matter what. Talk to y'all next time.